Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We got some real bad feedback there, and it seems to have dissipated. That's very nice. Quite fantastically, actually. All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, where mercury light bulbs are the norm, as everybody has a part-time job as one, because the radiation level from Fukushima is so freaking high, which apparently is very also good for the economy, and everybody says that they feel much brighter. And my very special guest today is known only as Richard, coming from an undisclosed bushman's hut, allegedly. In some description of New Zealand mountain range with sacred, presumed to be extinct flora and fauna around him. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. That was a brilliant intro.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about who it is you are and what it is you do, and then we'll go. And then we'll get into some discussion.
Sure. Well, I run a website called wakeupkiwi.com. It's been live for a little over 2 years now, and I guess I kind of, there's a lot of websites out there with the whole truther type material. They generally have a North American or European sort of focus, and really what I didn't see there was a lot that had more of a local sort of New Zealand / Australian focus, and so really I sort of started as a bit of a, I guess, a portal to sort of collate interesting articles. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that's internationally relevant, but where I can, I just put up articles or information that's particularly relevant to New Zealand and the Pacific, I guess, really. And when I can, I sort of do a lot of research and put together articles or sort of little PDF-type publications, if I find something that is of interest, and I think other people might find it interesting too.
Well, can we start off and think about why it is you decided to do this? Was it just the fact that you'd been following this for a while and saw that there was nobody in New Zealand really doing it?
I guess I've been aware of all this sort of stuff for quite some time now, and I guess after years of looking at, you know, other people's efforts and websites and things like that, it just occurred to me that potentially people in a place like New Zealand could feel a little bit alienated because, you know, there didn't seem to be a lot out there that sort of was inclusive of a place like New Zealand, and there's obviously a lot of people here who are sort of awakening to stuff that's really going on. I thought it might help for people to feel a little less isolated if they could find something with a bit of a local flavour to it as well.
Well, I guess you're kind of doing it for the same reasons I did then.
Yeah, and I mean, I had discovered your site probably only a few months before I decided to put this together. And I think everyone, you know, there's a lot more local stuff out there now. And, I mean, you're coming at it from quite a different direction than I am because, obviously, you're more of a broadcast focus and interviewing people and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm in no way disrespecting the efforts other people are making, but you're very good at doing it the way that you do it, and it's certainly not the way, you know, it's not a natural fit for me. So, you know, the whole interviewing people stuff, but the approach I took is sort of, I guess, one that's more suited to my personality, where I can just sort of collate interesting tidbits and upload them.
Yeah. I mean, well, some of us are born to do what you do because, you know, you do what I can't, is just the going into the extraordinary detail, the reading, the patience that it takes, the analysis, I don't have that. For me, it's mostly on the fly in interviews, so it's actually your part of the media and people like you with a similar skill set that are really the basis upon which shows like mine can exist, and often the people that really get interviewed because they're the ones who do all that really hard research.
Yeah, and I guess that, you know, we're complementary in our differing approaches. And
like airplane peanuts.
Yes, just like them. But I really, you know, I'm staggered at some of the research efforts that people put into. I mean, mine's fairly lightweight by comparison. I really only have the gusto and inclination to do it if it's something that I really have an interest in. And I guess for people that do a lot more of it than I do, you know, they're obviously inspired to do it because it's not the sort of thing that you can force yourself to do if you don't really have the stamina to go through all the research and whatnot. But if I latch onto something that I find interesting, then it makes it easy.
Yeah. Oh, we're about to be killed off by a bunch of ruthless exterminatory sociopaths that have been at it for quite some time by passing progressive legislation and making us even more and more enslaved day by day. Man, that's really interesting. I'm going to start looking into them, aren't they?
Yeah, it does tend to provide one with some impetus to get off one's backside and try and help out.
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate thing that was for me, wasn't it? Is okay, I can either work full time and be a slave and have creature comforts, or I can expose scumbaggery full time and basically be more or less just a hobo with an internet connection.
Yeah.
You know, I think I make the right choice. Whatever you can with whatever tools you got, you know.
Yeah. It's quite a commitment that you've made there, yeah.
Yeah. So do you have a slave job as well as doing what you do?
From time to time. I've been doing a lot of contract work and sort of entrepreneurial type stuff. So it's a bit patchy sometimes, but it's kind of a better fit for me than the old full-time grind that I did for so long. But it doesn't come without its challenges.
It doesn't? Well, what kind of challenges was full-time work putting up with for you?
What I was meeting there was with contracting and entrepreneurial type endeavors. You know, when things are good, they're great. When things are, when you had a bit of a rough patch, it's not so flash. But I guess I was in my last full-time job working for a particularly nasty multinational behemoth, and I learnt a lot and had some great experience. But I kind of always felt like I was a bit of a I wasn't the best fit there. I could pull it off, but I always felt like I was some sort of, like I shouldn't really have been there. Yeah. But, I mean, and a lot of people that get driven towards that sort of career stuff who don't know any better, you know, it's easy to live that sort of life when you don't see what you're doing. But I think that's why a lot of people like us find it pretty difficult to stomach something like that, because it doesn't sit well.
No, it's like you know how Spider-Man has the spider sense. Well, I think when you become informed about various elements of scumbaggery, you start to get a kind of scumbaggery sense, and you get into this this mode whereby you understand that you can actually feel it, you can see it, you can start to put the puzzle together about these people that I'm working for are setting my scumbaggery sense right off, you know? And you can't shake it. Once you can see it, once you can think about it, you see it everywhere. And it comes to the point where you're like, how do I even make a living if all the people that are making all the money engage in scumbaggery?
Yep.
And I think the answer is to try and make money off of exposing scumbaggery, because it's an infinite resource, all right? They produce the work for us. And people love seeing scumbaggery get exposed, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Yeah. Give the people what they want.
And I think it's becoming more and more prevalent now. Like, my father, even just listening to Ian Wishart on the radio there, and he's, you know, things that he would have never entertained thinking about a few years ago, you know, the likes of the climate change scam and all of this carry on. You know, people who a few years ago would have been completely blinkered to this sort of material and now sort of starting to go, well, hang on a second, this doesn't make sense. What's all this Agenda 21 carry on? It actually has real world relevance to them now, and it's no longer fringe. And they get a kick out of seeing this sort of stuff exposed, and they go into that fear bit for a while, and then eventually come out the other side and go, well, you know, there is something that can be done about it.
We've said on the show many times that it's very much like losing a loved one, is finding out the truth. You know, you've got all those stages. You've got those stages of denial, depression, aggression, and then finally acceptance, kind of thing.
And then there's the wanting to do something about it.
Yeah, well, I guess that part is sort of left out of the whole death in the family sort of thing, because you can't really do much about it when you're dead.
That's true. It's true. Unless you become a medium or something.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, the last thing is the last stage is acceptance, right? You accept that there's a new world order. You accept that there's a plan that is working to enslave and exterminate the population of the world. What then? And truthers often talk about this thing, oh, I want to wake people up. You can't wake people up. How did you wake up? Well, I sat down and watched 160 documentaries or something like that, radically changed my thinking. Okay, did anybody force you at gunpoint to do that? No. Well, then nobody actually woke you up. You woke you up. And that sounds like the Blake music coming in there.
Pearly shell from the ocean.
Actually, no. We're coming back from break now, aren't we? We're having a little bit of a rollover with that. Can we bring that music in the background down just a wee bit? Tad, it'll be really nice. Thank you very much. We killed it. Thank goodness we killed it. Okay. I like to kill ad breaks whenever possible, you know, with some form of joke, I guess. Can't really think of one now. Anyway, what were we talking about? Ah, yes. After you wake up, what do you do in the morning? Get out of bed. You got to work, don't you? So once you've accepted that there's a conspiracy going on, once you wake up to that and wake yourself up to it, you know, because nobody ever forces me to get out of bed. You know what forces me to get out of bed? Badly needing to go take a wiki leak. All right? That is the only thing that will really force me is myself, my own body, and my choice to go and do what absolutely needs to be done. All right? And I think that analogy, not to put the word anal in there for any particular reason, works very, very well indeed. Once you wake up, you've got to go out and get to work, okay? You've got to get to work exposing the New World Order. You've got to get to work replacing all of these poisonous products and cocktails of bioweapons and heavy metal contaminants in your house the frack out your door. You've got to get rid of all of these pharmaceutical medications and all of this disgusting fruits and vegetables that are sprayed with goodness knows what. And think about it. For a very long time before you start doing everything, because you've got a whole new life ahead of you now, right? It ain't going to be the same. You're never going to get your original life back, I assure you, because things will change around you anyway, and that original life wouldn't exist even if you wanted it regardless, but your perception of reality changes so that now only truth matters to you. And that's a really hard life. You'd be surprised how easy it is to get along through life just by lying to yourself and lying to other people. You'd be surprised the rewards that come with it. You get money, you get power, You get fancy clothes. You get great restaurateuring. I mean, it's just like what the reason people go into crime. It's because it's lucrative. All right? Telling the truth won't make you a rich man. Okay? Not for the equal amount of effort as telling the amount right amount of lies. However, the consequences to other people of lies are great. That's why you, the liar, accumulate all their wealth and ideas and power. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that. You can't lie and deceive people who only value truth. That's probably the one benefit I've found to thinking this way that I do. Richard.
Lenny.
Can I ask you, what do you think the plan is for New Zealand? The mineral resources, the geopolitical position of this country, strategic assets, this sort of thing. All those important elements which the World Bank and IMF have even listed down in leaked documents that they want to seize from countries in order to control them. Because you've done, as far as I know, a substantial amount of analysis on this globalist takeover of New Zealand. And I don't think I've actually had anybody on the show before who talks about that topic in specificity. And I'd like it if you'd indulge me.
Sure. Well, I guess what I've done in the research in this PDF, which is called International Ownership of New Zealand Banks, and it's got a very long sub-name, an analysis of the key majority shareholders of the main New Zealand and Australian banks, including a global overview and implications of the central banking / Federal Reserve banking systems. So it's very much got a banking focus. But and what you were just saying there just reminded me of an interview I heard with Evelyn from Aotea, A Wider Perspective, where someone asked her a similar question, and she was talking about all of our re-imported politicians, you know, the likes of John Key, the leaders of the Labour Party. I think there was one in the Greens and another one of the Reserve Bank, who have all sort of spent 20 years outside New Zealand working for these monstrosity United Nations machinations and globalist banks, and they sort of come back and get re-imported and slapped into these influential positions. And their agenda is no longer for New Zealand. They've been co-opted by these international interests who have either probably paid them off or threatened the hell out of them or both. And they come back here with this new mission, which is to basically strip the assets of the country for these, for their offshore masters. And I guess, you know, that's got more, not, it's not just a financial perspective, it's your mineral resources, your oil and all of gas and all of that sort of stuff. And I guess what I've done, it's got a bit more of a banking focus, but once you actually start...
Would you like to read it out?
Which part?
Well, I mean, how long's the document? It's like 20 pages, isn't it? We've got like about an hour and a half left in the show.
Oh, I don't think you want me reading the whole lot, but
it's quite substantial. I mean, like you know what's going on here, so you could actually take us through it and roll through and give us a brief summary, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, I can do that. Sure.
Okay.
Well,
I'm just bringing up my screen now with the document, so that we can even actually take a look at it there. And you might want to hang up that phone in the background.
It's all go here.
Oh, yes, indeedy, it is. All right,
Should we tell people where they can get their hands on a copy of this if they want to have a look as well.
Well, absolutely. You just go to wakeupkiwi.com. That's wakeupkiwi.com. Who owns New Zealand banks, I think, is a good Google search for you.
What? Yeah, it will come up under that, but you can also, if you click on the featured articles link in the left nav, it'll bring up a page and you can get it from there.
So if we go to wakeupkiwi.com and featured articles right here, down on the left, oh, the little picture of John Key and the Freemasons. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, that's a personal favourite.
Oh, yeah. I love it how these people just give themselves away. You know, we've got photos of him also at the New Zealand Zionist Society meetings. He's apparently like the head of the New Zealand Zionist Society, the head of New Zealand Freemasons, and the head of the country, and the trade minister, and the son. And, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And he appoints all the ministers by hand. that control everything that the country does and all the policy and everything. And he used to work for the Federal Reserve and Merrill Lynch, right? This guy is so dirty that it's oh my God. There were only three words.
The most beautiful part of that picture with the Freemason signs is if you check out the specific version of blue that is his tie. It's the Freemason blue as well, so he's just, you know, he's got it all going on. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Sorry about that, I was muted. John Key's one of three highly placed Freemasons in New Zealand, the other two being John Banks, who's John Key's coalition partner, who rubber stamps all of his policy that he purposely pushes through Parliament, and the other being Len Brown, the purveyor and the Lord Mayor of Dutch Ubershitty, the super city up here in Auckland, which has been modelled under the Agenda 21 document, according to Mels Barton, who came out in praise of voting for Len Brown because he was planning to use the Agenda 21 eco-city model. Yeah, we've got three Freemasons in the three top powerful positions in the country. There's nothing going on here. I love it. I love it. And aren't they all, you know, somehow linked to some form of scandal or BS or international foreign ownership or whatever? Okay. Well, let's go through the document, shall we?
Let's go through the document. I'm sorry, I'm ridiculous.
That's fine. So I guess the idea behind this, where it came to me from was I'd basically just been wondering who owned these banks. I had some vague, I knew they were all Australian owned, and for some reason I thought it all neatly matched up that each one of the big four Australian banks owned one of the big four New Zealand banks, and in turn somehow that there were four big American banks that then owned the four Australian banks, but of course that's not the case. It gets much more fragmented, but effectively it is the same people that own all of them at the top anyway. And so I started, originally it was just going to be like a 3 or 4 pager type thing, but as I went into it further and further, I sort of started to make more connections and draw more parallels, and it started fitting into other work that other people had done. And so before long it had sort of taken on its own momentum, and it turned into something much bigger than I ever expected it to be, but I never wanted it to be a long, drawn-out, yawny-type book. I wouldn't have had the stamina for that. That's why it's, you know, it's only a 20-page PDF with lots of pretty pictures where I could find relevant ones to put in there. So hopefully it's not going to put people off, because there's nothing worse than, you know, turning it into tragedy and hope and making people sit through lots of boring words. So I just tried to keep it kind of concise.
Well, where would you like to start? I mean, as you can see on the Skype, I've got the document open, and we're recording this. So if you'd like to just let me know where you'd like me to go with it and run through it with
sure.
us.
Okay, well, I guess page 1, which is the one after the contents page probably.
Okay, yep. Let's go down past the contents. Right, international ownership of New Zealand banks. Introduction, who owns New Zealand banks?
So, yeah, basically you can... The logos on the bottom there are the four main banks in New Zealand. And there's a list on the right-hand side there. There's 22 registered banks, and that list is from the Reserve Bank because they all have to be registered with the Reserve Bank. And so we've got ANZ, which is Australia New Zealand Bank, which is owned by a similarly named parent company in Australia. We've got ASB, which is owned by the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. And you've got BNZ.
Yeah.
And that's owned by the National Bank of Australia. And then the last one, Westpac, which is owned by Westpac Banking Corporation, also of Australia. So it's the first step's fairly sort of simple. It's only after that that it starts to get a bit more interesting, shall we say. And
so there's a whole bunch of different New Zealand banks, and basically they're all owned by Australia. But those Australian banks are actually owned by other people, right? And so on and so forth down the chain, like a shell game?
It is. It very much turns into a shell game. And it actually gets quite... it's quite funny. Because if you look at the bottom of page one then, ANZ is actually partly owned by National Australia Bank, which also wholly owns Bank of New Zealand. ASB is partly owned by National Australia Bank, which also owns BNZ. BNZ is owned by National Australia Bank, which also owns part of itself by way of another company called National Nominees. And again, Westpac is partly owned by National Australia Bank, which also owns the Bank of New Zealand. So even at the first level, it's starting to get a little bit convoluted and raising of eyebrows. It gets a lot more interesting after that.
It's like Russian dolls.
Yeah. And so I guess if we then roll on to page two, I kind of figured the best, because I'm quite a visual sort of a person, I figured the best approach would be to lay this out with logos, because it's more interesting than a boring list. And it's interesting to note, I can't see your screen. Oh, there it is. On page two, where it's listing ANZ, you've got ANZ New Zealand, which is owned by ANZ, Australia New Zealand Banking Group. And the key shareholders of ANZ are HSBC, JP Morgan Chase, Citibank, Citigroup, UBS, and National Australia Bank. And those
National. So National Australia Bank, otherwise known as NAB, is that because they nab all the money off you?
Yeah. And four of those five main banks actually own large stakes in the other four New Zealand banks. So it's already pretty incestual there as well. And then there's a number of companies which appear for the first time.
And like Fidelity Investments, who have a nice pyramid with an all-seeing eye as their wonderful Freemasonic symbol and logo. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com with Richard from Wake Up New Zealand. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Now, let's continue on. We've got some banks here that are starting to be involved here in the ownership of New Zealand's national banks and Australia's national bank. And I guess it starts to kind of start climbing that chain there. So, Richard, if you could continue. You can see the screen still, can't you?
I can, sure, yep. Yeah, so this is where we sort of depart New Zealand and Australia, and it becomes very much an international sort of an affair. And you can see with these huge multinational banking entities that pop up as the owners of the Australian banks, and the sheer repetition of the of these logos, it all becomes pretty farcical pretty quickly. Because, you know, for the four big Australian banks, each one of them has a stake. Citibank has a stake in each one of them. HSBC has a stake in each one of them. JP Morgan Chase has a stake in each one of them. Fidelity is involved in most, and the same with BlackRock. And these are, Goldman Sachs is in there a couple of times. These are companies that keep coming up time and time again. So I thought, well, that's starting to form a bit of an interesting picture. And further on, at this point, I remembered about some research that some Swiss scientists had done, and I sort of was starting to see the list. We get to it later, but there's a list of the top 50 super connected companies. They basically ran about 37 million companies through a supercomputer and wound up producing this list of the top 50 companies that basically run the whole show. And I started to remember this list and watch the names starting to pop up, and I just thought, oh, wow. Because the research they did on it in itself is fascinating. But once you start to actually relate it to real-world stuff, local businesses and companies, it sort of takes on a different... It's all of a sudden becomes real. It's not just a list of companies you've never heard of before. You can actually see where their influence is starting to appear. And so from pages two to five, that's looking at these big international companies that own the four Australian banks. And then I thought, well, that's an interesting list of companies there that are owning the Australian banks. And I thought, well, why not have a look at who owns them? And from page six, that's what I started doing, basically. And so from pages 6 to 9, there's basically 20 key companies there. And I started to look at who owns the companies that own the Australian banks. And this is where it just became completely farcical, because they all own each other. There's certain key players that are... I mean, BlackRock is in virtually every single one of these 20 companies. Wellington Management, which has got nothing to do with Wellington, New Zealand, is actually an American investment entity with an Australian office. They're owning...
What page is that on?
So we're starting here from page 6. So between page 6 is... From page 6 to 9 is basically...
They're kind of a little bit jumbled up. Like, I'm looking at page 6 when you're talking about what's on page 1 kind of thing. I think the document's a little fizzled. Can you see what I'm looking at?
I can see what you're looking at, yeah.
It says,
yeah,
international ownership in New Zealand banks, but this is page 7 out of 20. Is that correct?
Yep, you're in the right place. It does... I've tried to make it... keep it simple, but it's a little bit...
I mean, I'm just, when we're running through this, I don't know specifically about what page you're talking about when you're talking about it, so I'm just kind of like all over the place, you know.
Sorry. I'm trying to not be confusing. Let's just go then to page 7. So, first of all,
and page 7 says international ownership of New Zealand banks. Yes,
that's correct. Okay. And you've got, hang on, I'm not seeing what you. I'm seeing an ASB logo there.
Yeah, and just above it is the international ownership of New Zealand banks.
Are you saying that says? Is it saying it's page 7 where you are?
Yeah, 7 of 20.
Are you looking at the Scribd version?
The Scribd version, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That website may have. I've found. I only uploaded it to Scribd yesterday, and I've found it's a little bit twitchy. I think it gets a bit confused.
Yeah. Well, see, here I am. I scroll up a page, and it says I'm on page 5 now, and that seems to be like more like. So there's a page there, yeah. A page there, a page there. Where the heck are we, bro? I'm confused. I'm as confused as Confucius.
Do you have the PDF version there? Because that,
I think that website, I might do.
I think that website is, it's got a little bit going on. I think it might have some gremlins in there.
Oh, man, I have no idea where I've got the PDF. I don't know if I've got it, actually. No, I don't think I do.
That's right. Anyway, well, I mean,
where in the hell is it? Isn't it downloadable off the site?
It is. It will take you a couple of minutes, probably, to bring it down, because it's 50 megs.
50 megs?
Yeah. Well, it's print resolution, so if people want to print it out, it looks pretty. There's nothing worse than printing out a document and having it look terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got it downloading. Well, here we are. 1, 2, 3. So where were we then? I've got it up here now.
Truck on down to page 7. It's. I mean, it really is the kind of thing that, if you're reading through it page after page, it makes sense. But here I am trying to talk about it and not confuse.
Yeah, and not to mention we've got all the radio listeners who can't actually see what we're looking at.
Yeah. So I won't spend too long on this, but basically there's 4 pages there. And so what they are attempting to show is who owns the companies that own the Australian banks. And basically, in a nutshell, what it's showing is we've got 20 companies here. Got Vanguard, Wells Fargo, BlackRock, Legal & General, Fidelity, Goldman Sachs, Macquarie, Fisher Investments, Commercia, World Asset Management, Everett's, Wellington Management, Mitsubishi, Mellon Bank of New York, Northern Trust, Deutsche Bank, and Merrill Lynch. So we've got, there's actually 22 companies there, but these are the companies that own the Australian banks. They're the major shareholders, and they buy and sell their positions, so they come and go. But the interesting thing about these 20-something companies is that when you look at who owns them, they all own each other. There's a few random ones in here that come and go, but
it's like a snake eating itself.
Yeah, virtually all of them have a stake in each other. Some of them are more prolific than others, like BlackRock and Fidelity and Wellington Management.
This means they're untouchable, because it means that if anybody ever messes with any of them, you're actually taking on the whole lot of them.
I guess you could see it that way, yeah.
Yeah, like if some unruly government, for example, wanted to kick, say, Wells Fargo out of their country, they'd have all of these other major finance houses saying different. They could implode and destroy your economy overnight if they wanted.
Yes, I guess that's possible. Mm. So it's all very incestual. And
incestuous is the word, I think.
Incestuous, okay, we'll go with that.
Although, we could call it incestual because it's both incestuous and ancestral.
Very good. Very good.
Would you like to continue?
Sure. Yeah. So it's really a visual thing, and I think when you look at start looking at the logos and the repetition of them, it kind of becomes the reality of it becomes apparent quite quickly and quite easily. So
it's the military-industrial complex, in other words. This is the financial medical complex sort of arm of the New World Order.
I guess so. And if you roll down to page 10... that's going to be a little difficult to see on your screen there. Where are you? Maybe one more. Go down one more.
One more page?
Yeah. There may be a bit of lag. You might already be on page 10 and I can't see it.
Uh-oh, my computer's frozen. Here we go. No, she's fine. She's fine. Okay. Bugger, well, you're getting hidden into a break already anyway. Frack. This is not turning out too well. Maybe we should just stick with the conversation, eh? Because this is obviously well thought out. My bad. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with Richard. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If we were comic book characters, we'd be members of the Justice League, and today we are discussing what is happening, meanwhile, at the Legion of Doom. And we've exposed that the Legion of Doom here is, in fact, a rather enormous list of incestuous scumbaggery corporations who have copious quantities of capacity to print money out of nothing and just make up the world's currency and control everybody's economic viability. Oh my goodness. What happens when these people get exposed? Once all of their lies fall on the floor and there ain't nothing left? Well, I certainly hope I live to see that day anyway. Richard, what's your assessment of this, all right? Are we basically looking at the financial arm here of the Legion of Doom?
It would certainly seem so, yeah.
Yeah.
And what I think is funny about it is, you know, all these banks make an effort to brand themselves and do their market positioning, and it's all really one bank with a bunch of different brands. It's like, which flavour of criminality would you like? Would you like your flavour to be blue with a person in the logo, or would you like it to be, you know, would you like it to have a yellow logo? It doesn't really matter.
Would you like to sell your child to the Yakuza, the Chinese Mafia, the Russian mob, or the Sicilian Mafia? Okay, who do you want to sell your daughter to? And you're like, well, ultimately, I wouldn't want to sell her to any gangsters, bro. And go, well, I'm sorry. This is an offer you can't refuse. Your daughter, of course, being your country, being sold out to all of these horrific scum, who, as far as I'm concerned, look like just, yeah, some kind of incredibly nasty manifestation of scumbaggery, the likes of which has taken goodness knows how many hundreds of years and many, many secret meetings in order to pull this kind of a scam off. This is remarkably complex in terms of just having enough of a scheme whereby you can indeed own the whole world using all corporations that just own each other, you know, left, right, and center, absolutely no holds barred. They own everything, you can't actually get away from it. All these little companies and things that you've been getting your loans off, that your governments have been talking to and doing deals with and everything of that nature, hundreds of different names and faces and logos, and they're all owned by the exact same group of scum. Holy crap. What do we do? Can you hear me, Richard?
Oh, yes, I'm here. Sorry, I was just waiting for you to finish your monologue.
I did. That's what the pause was about.
Okay. Well, there's a little paragraph on page 10 that's actually an excerpt from an article in New Scientist magazine, which is about these Swiss scientists. They were from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich. And it's probably easiest if I just read this paragraph. A quote, as protests against financial power sweep the world this week, science may have confirmed the protesters' worst fears. An analysis of the relationships between 43,000 transnational corporations has identified a relatively small group of companies, mainly banks, with disproportionate power over the global economy. And so this is what these Swiss scientists found, courtesy of running it all through a supercomputer. And on page 11, I've got the list of 50 companies that they came up with. And what I found really interesting about this is that half of the companies on the list they came up of the top 50 super connected companies in the world, half of the companies on this list also popped up in my research, most of them being the ones at the very top. So that kind of made it quite real for me, because I could actually start to see how visceral it really was. And number one on this list is Barclays. I'll just read out the top few, because people may have heard of them, and they're most of the ones that came up in my research as well. Number one is Barclays Bank. Number two is Capital Group. Number three is FMR Corporation, which is Fidelity, with the pyramid with the all-seeing eye that you spotted, Vinny. Number four is AXA. Number five is State Street Corporation. Number six, JP Morgan Chase. Number seven, Legal & General. Number eight, Vanguard Group. Nine is UBS, which is the Union Bank of Switzerland. 10, Merrill Lynch. 11, Wellington Management. 12, Deutsche Bank. So the first 12 that are on their list also came up on this list. And then you've got a whole bunch of other ones further down that you'd recognize. Mellon, Bank of New York, Goldman Sachs, Mitsubishi Financial Group, Lloyds. So there's a lot of the biggest ones that also actually own our banks. And it's not just true of New Zealand and Australia. I'm sure if you took it a step further, you'd find the same thing in probably most Western countries, and even some countries that aren't in the West.
So the study shows 147 super entities control 40% of a network of 43,060 transnational corporations and 60% of their revenues, which means these 147 entities run global business. And they're all involved with each other, and they all own each other. Aren't shares supposed to be like for private shareholders? Like, who are the private shareholders? I mean, because it can't just be a company that owns a company that owns a company that owns a company that owns a company that creates another company that owns another company that owns a company that owns another company. Like, there has to be money coming from some person somewhere.
That's true. And so what I'm listing here in the research that I've done in comparing it with what the guys in Switzerland did is, I'm just looking at the biggest ones, the majority shareholders, and I got this information from investment trading sites in the US and the UK. They're all listed in the sources there. And so there will be mom and pop investors in there as well. You know, this is not a definitive list of the only companies that own parts of these other companies, but it's the main, the key, the big guys that keep reappearing. That's what we're dealing with here. There's no
point. What about the names, the people that keep reappearing in directorship positions and so on and so forth?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you could take it to that next level, and I think once you start doing that, you quickly wind up with a, producing a book. But I kind of found that from taking it to this level alone, it starts to build up a pretty interesting picture. And, yeah, I'm sure that if you went into names and directorships, you would find interlocking directorships and all sorts of conflicts of interest.
I wonder how long this network in some form or another has actually existed. Have they been running global business since time immemorial?
Well, I think there's been a lot of consolidation, and I found an infographic in my travels which showed the merging of United States media companies between 1960 and, well, current day. And I don't know how many. It was an infographic that showed which ones had merged and bought who. And you went from a list of about 30 or 40 in the 60s. By 2011, it's basically four. They've all eaten each other up, merged, consolidated. And it's the same thing with these financial entities. It's very easy to control the show when you've got less strings to pull. It's a lot easier to run things when you've got four entities than 40. And I suppose the easiest, somewhere along the way, the plan has been to consolidate these things to make it a little bit easier to nudge in certain directions.
And what do you think is the end goal here? They just want to own and control absolutely everything? I mean, was it you that sent me the PDFs about the mineral extraction rights and things of that nature?
No, I don't think that was me.
No. Okay, well, I have you mixed up with someone else then. But this is good too. All right. Where does this lead? The study published in New Scientist. Okay, so we've got 147 entities that run global business. Okay, so the only reason why they're running global business is probably because nobody knows that they're running global business, isn't it? If everybody knew about it, they'd be exposed, and nobody'd continue to do business with them, and they'd pull all their money out, wouldn't they? And they collapse like a house of cards.
Indeed, yeah. And I guess, you know, it's so big and convoluted, and the number of shareholders in these things. If these guys in Switzerland hadn't run all this through a supercomputer, and you know they hadn't come up with this list, it's through people doing things like that actually start to enable people to get their head around what's going on. And then when you interrelate it with other research, then yeah, if people didn't go to these links, then you know it would all be completely unknown and anonymous and really hard to prove, or you know, people would probably have had suspicions about this sort of stuff, but it's not till you actually see the numbers when they've been crunched, and it's not until then that it actually becomes apparent what the heck's going on.
Right. Okay. So, let's assume this is the situation for New Zealand. One of the former Merrill Lynch, which is part of this network of countries that run global business, henchman named John Key, worked for the Federal Reserve, which also is owned in turn by this banking cartel, is now the Prime Minister of New Zealand. And what do these banking cartels want then? Well, they want nobody to have any freedoms. Okay, well, he passes the SIS bill, the GCSB bill, the State Intelligence Services, and Government Security Bureau, or whatever it is, bills for those.
The NSA.
Yeah. Well, the NSA actually has an office in our government surveillance bureau here, the GCSB. So,
well, it's the GCSB pretty much is the NSA.
Yeah.
Different badge slapped on it.
A different accent. Like in Mexico, it would pronounce the NSA. And what's happening here, I think, is that the bankers don't want anybody to have the ability to expose their cartel through study information and things like that to any great extent. I mean, anybody can talk about it on the street. They can't stop that, and they wouldn't try to because then it would just raise even more suspicion. But people who get into massive positions of power and influence to achieve perhaps whistleblower status, that kind of thing, they become targets because they're very, very dangerous because they're very, very credible. Whereas they can just dismiss anybody offhand if they're not like one of their clique as crazy and nobody will listen to them anyway, you know, which has tended to work for quite some time until now. Because the average person's starting to get a little bit more informed, aren't they, Richard?
Yes, it's quite right, Vinny, they are.
Permit me to issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. Mayor M. Shell Rothschild. How long have the Rothschilds been involved in this scheme?
Well, the family, since they renamed themselves, I think it's about 230 years, because originally their name was Bauer, B-A-U-E-R. This further on in this document, it does go into a bit of history about how that whole thing came about, because I guess at this point we've come to the point of, you know, where does this all lead? You know, we've got all this data and correlated research, and you go, well, what's the next step? And I guess the natural, basically from here on, we're looking at the central banking system, and then we, you know, probably the most well-known central bank of them all would be the Federal Reserve System of the US, and we start to look at where the central banking system came from, who kicked it off, who runs it, who owns it, and of course the Federal Reserve is a big part of that because there's a lot of weight to be thrown around there. And then you start looking at the names of the banking families that are involved in this. Rockefellers, Carnegies, Vanderbilts, Morgans, Rothschilds, and these really are, you know, if it's possible to go into any more detail about who the actual people are behind these big companies, and it's very well hidden and convoluted, you would find these are the same names that are coming up behind these banks, because these are the banks that have shareholdings and run the central banking and reserve banking systems. And I guess that's sort of the direction that the document heads in from here, because it's sort of the natural flow of things when you're going back up to try and figure out what's at the top.
And it becomes apparent that those at the top are in fact not just names and faceless corporations and logos, they're actual individuals. Families.
Yeah, they are. And something that I found really interesting about this, that I didn't know before sticking my beak into it, was if you look at page 12, there's a list on the right-hand side of all the countries in the world that have a central bank. And they haven't all had them always. They've been slowly... this list has slowly been building up over the years in a consistent effort, and it's basically the families and that own these big banks that have been instigating this.
All right, and Richard, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back, folks.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't
welcome
know.
Back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. During the summertime in New Zealand, you will be listening live at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, midday till 2 p.m., if I remember correctly. That's Tuesday through Saturday, because we're doing it 5 days a week, and we broadcast live from the future. That's why the news is so current. And my very special guest is Richard from WakeUpKiwi.com. Now, where we left off was with countries that have central banks. And I'm going to see if I can blow this up a little bit for those of you who are watching on the thing. Because what it occurs to me is that I don't know the flags of every single bank in the world. I mean, that's quite a Freudian slip there. I don't know the flags of every bank in the world, because that's all that our countries and flags have come to represent, isn't it? Some kind of banking cartel. But anyway, my point being that if you tried to look at all of these flags, it's like going through the book of flags. You know, every single freaking country, as you go through, has all of these banks controlling them. You know, what did they do in Libya when they had a public bank that had outlawed interest? Well, they said Gaddafi was a murderer and a war criminal and so on and so forth, so therefore we can just justify drone striking innocent people in the street. I don't quite understand how that works until the very first company that the rebels set up after deposing Gaddafi was revealed to be a private central bank. And the second company that they set up right after that is a private central oil company. Then it becomes clear, doesn't it, that if you as a nation wind up following somebody who doesn't want to be a part of this banking cartel, you're going to get demonized in the media, you're going to get bombed, and you're probably going to get assassinated so that you can't tell the truth about what went on. You know, that's who these freaking people are. You know? Do you think people actually grasp this concept? Is what I said just said the truth, in your opinion, Richard?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And it's interesting to note that, like, in the year 2000, the countries that didn't have a central bank, and where all the wars have been since then, or attempted wars. So in 2000, there were only 7 countries left that didn't have a central bank, which were Afghanistan, Iraq, Sudan, Libya, Cuba, North Korea, and Iran. Then enter all the wars and palaver. And by 2003, there were only 5 left without a central bank, which was Sudan, Libya, Cuba, North Korea, and Iran. And in 2011, there were only 3 countries left without a central bank, which were Cuba, North Korea, and Iran. And to date, now, there are only 2 countries left in the world that don't have a reserve bank. And that probably never will, because they're basically run by the cabal, and that's Monaco and the Vatican. So, yeah, I don't... When they're wholly owned by the bad guys, I don't think they probably need a reserve bank, a central bank. But like you were saying, Vinny, you look at where all the wars have been recently, and the names that have dropped off that list of countries that don't have a central bank, and it starts, there's some interesting parallels there, for sure.
Okay, so if you want peace, have a private central bank that has already conquered you.
In a nutshell, they could put that in their pamphlet.
It's somewhat bleak. You know, that's a dark call, man. I mean, some dude came over to your house, right? And he dressed in a really nice suit. And he says to you, sign this piece of paper. And I go, what's on this piece of paper? He says, it basically makes you and your children and your family and all your assets and everything mine forever. And you're like, no, I don't want to sign it. And he goes, you really don't want to sign it? You do realize there's consequences if you don't sign this document here. What do you mean? Well, instead of all of your country and you and your family and all of your worldly possessions and everything just belonging to me, I'll just destroy them all. And you'll all be dead anyway. So do you want to sell out now? And you go, yes, sir. That's how it works, doesn't it?
Pretty much.
That's freaking sad, man. It means that even if we do have a really good Prime Minister who actually has the country's interests in mind, he has to follow what the foreign interests tell him, or he's freaking dead. And we're dead as a country if we stand up. This is why I think... I had this analogy. It's like a zeppelin. You know, when you see the zeppelins tied down, they've got ropes over each end of it and over the top of it and ropes everywhere, you know, holding this one big thing down. And I think that's what happened to the country. They've got us lashed with so many ropes that in order to get out of it, we have to cut all of the ropes simultaneously. Like, every country needs to go into open revolt against these bankers simultaneously in order for any kind of resistance to work, because otherwise you'd have the world army take us down one by one.
Mm.
How do we cause a simultaneous banking system change from the grassroots up to thwart the scumbaggery of this relatively small position of scumbags? I mean, we've got 187 companies on a list, right? We've got directorships and all of those. How about we freeze their assets and conduct an investigation? Maybe? Simultaneously? Disable them globally? But what kind of havoc would that wreak? Because these people control all the money everywhere. What happens to everything everywhere if they get shut down? Even if they're doing it evilly, at least it works. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, it's definitely can't be a piecemeal thing. Like you say, it's got to be a massive sort of coordinated effort. Otherwise, it's just going to be playing whack-a-mole.
But, of course, we can't coordinate our efforts secretly because they listen to every single conversation and recording.
Mm. Got their cold, clammy hands and all of it.
Yeah. You see, as soon as you get big enough, as soon as you start to have a great enough effect, bam, that's when they get you. Or buy you off or threaten you or something like that. So it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter who manages to rise to stardom and start trying to fill your messiah complex, does it? Everybody winds up getting corrupted. Everybody winds up getting bored off by this scum, by one way or another, you know? You either die the hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
True. It's a good quote.
We've got this perpetual thing going on now, even, don't we? We've never managed to shake off this banking cartel of scumbaggery, whatever the hell it's been operating for goodness knows how long. Never been able to shake loose of them before. What says we can shake loose of them now? Ah! Information age. Only reason people don't know about these people is because the information isn't out there. Now we're putting it out there. Let's see what happens.
That's true, and these people have been, they based all of their efforts on incrementalism. It's little by little over a very long period of time. So it gets to the point where they're so big and so influential that the only way they could possibly be taken down is through public awareness and being exposed. Because once people see what's going on and they're exposed, the show's over. And that's why they're so desperate to stop that from happening, because there's no going back.
Have you ever heard of the Nigerian scam?
Yeah, I've heard of a few of them, yeah.
Right, so now everybody knows about the Nigerian scam. So these Nigerian scam artists are screwed, aren't they? Because everybody knows their scam. We could do the exact same with the banking system. Just get everybody to realise that it's a big scam. Hey, you get one of those scam emails, send it back. All right. It's like a bill to pay your interest by Merrill Lynch or something. No, send it back. It's a Nigerian scam, bro. This would be great. The day that we don't have to pay fake money to people who made up said fake money in order to get us to indebt ourselves and make ourselves work really, really hard in order to pay back that fake money. Oh, mate, I would love for a day where that wasn't happening. But it happens every day.
Yeah.
If we look at the bank... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No,
it's keep my going. Show. You go ahead.
Well, I guess what I was going to say really is, you know, when it gets to this point, we go, okay, well, we've got this list of families, the surnames, people have heard of them before, and, you know, part of it, people go, oh, yeah, well, it's just urban legend and whatnot. But it's not actually that hard to draw the parallels. And, you know, for example, there on page 13, ironically enough, is basically dedicated to the Rothschilds, bless them. And it explains where they came from, how they got their name. You know, basically, the original, who was called Bauer, he hung a sign over the door of his shop, which was a red shield with a Roman eagle on it. And his business basically became known as the Red Shield firm, and Red Shield in old German is Rothschild, and it was his son that wound up eventually changing his name to Rothschild. So that's how the Bauers became the Rothschilds, with this red shield. And the interesting thing is that this red shield pops up everywhere. You know, it's in the Rothschild coat of arms.
It's also
smack bang in the middle. It's right smack bang in the middle of the coat of arms of the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, along with various other little details.
A friend of mine went into the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, and it was on the wall behind the receptionist. It was big. It was big too.
There's a picture of that on page 14. You can actually see it if you look closely. You've got people walking past on the street. And if you look in the back there, you can see a dirty great red shield in the middle of the coat of arms behind that the reception right of Reserve Bank of New Zealand. Yeah.
With the dragons on the side of it.
And if you look also at the bottom of page 14, there's a picture of the Reserve Bank of New Zealand coat of arms, letters patent, 1965. And I've put a comment there, would you like to play Let's Spot the Red Shield, because there's about three of them. If these people weren't so arrogant about putting their little signs all over the place, then they might have been able to keep the lid on the stuff a little bit longer, but because they probably never figured they were going to get found out, it's a little bit late to roll it back now, though.
You know when somebody comes up with a brilliant scheme and you're like, oh my God, that sounds amazing, foolproof, nothing could ever stop us. There's always something that goes wrong, eh?
Yeah. Doesn't matter if you're a master criminal. It doesn't just happen to the good guys.
Yeah. Well, and this is another thing. People don't give these creeps too much credit as well. They think they control absolutely everything. Well, you know, technically they own everything, including your ass, but they can't actually physically control you. Physically controlling you is the only thing that will ensure that you cannot ever fight back in any way. Right now we're not being physically controlled. We haven't been rounded up yet and put into frickin' camps, right? And that's what they're frickin' planning. These god-awful double-fenced prison camps that have been set up by the Federal Emergency Management Agency in the United States. There's hundreds of them. Some of them got like huge rows of fires and ovens and massive warehouses full of cages with manacles bolted to the floor and stuff like this. All the barbed wire fencing on the outside of it, kind of facing in, massive stockpiles of multiple person body burial coffins, you know, stacks of hundreds of thousands of them just sitting on the side of the road. People are like, what the frack is going on here? Richard, are you there?
I'm here, Vinny. I was just thinking about what you're saying, and it just reminded me of something else, that, you know, when you start to read about the Cabal and the Illuminati, and it's easy to get the sense that they're all aligned and they're all working together and we're stuffed. But because of the nature of the personalities involved and who they are, they all want to outdo each other. So there's multiple factions within the whole thing that are all scrambling all over each other because, you know, they all want to be running the show and have it their way. So they're kind of...
Well, what Michael Rupert said famously is he said it's like a crap game table of gangsters. One of them's the Gambinos and one of them's the Gotties. And other people can't come and play at the crap table at all. But occasionally one of the people that are playing at it might shoot one another, you know. Hey, it's just part of the game. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man.
Welcome back. I've been everywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My guest is Richard from WakeUpKiwi.com. We're talking about the Rothschilds. I'm just thinking about, like, you know, that Johnny Cash song, I've Been Everywhere, Man, but do a Rothschild version of it, you know, called I Own Everything, Man. And you know, when Johnny Cash goes, you know, I've been to Reno, Fargo, Chicago, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, he can just actually rattle off, like, all of the corporations and everything that he owns, you know. Like, I own Wells Fargo, and I've got embargoes on Iraq Pro or something. You know, it'll be classic. I own everything, man, and I came up with a big plan to buy up all your assets, man, and I'll own everything. Maybe yeah. It would be a big hit on the stock market. Yeah. I'll go back in the recordings thing, and I'll probably have a jam session with him and my mate the other day. That was quite funny. In fact, yeah, we were just thinking it would be a really good idea to play some nice summery music. And when you think about it, dealing with these very harsh realities as we do, Richard, you know, there's the serious issues of our time. It occurs to you that you've got to have a laugh here or two, here or there. You've got to blow off some steam in order to kind of cope with it. Otherwise, it kind of starts to really badly eat you up from the inside, you know. I remember a couple of years back, bro, I was really, really aggressive with everybody. I freaking hated, you know. I was openly calling people slaves and sheep and scum and filth in the street. It was just antisocial. I mean, I still think all those things, I just don't say them, you know. They put a filter on that stuff. Or mutter it under my breath.
You've still got the evil laugh, though, which goes well with the material.
It does. I mean, why couldn't I have been born into a Rothschild banking cartel and give big speeches and, like, run a radio show about how we're taking everybody over with my predominant evil laugh? Ah! I suppose I could do a skit of it, you know. There's nothing to stop me. Now, speaking of which, the Red Shield coat of arms, it's right there in the Reserve Bank. Okay, so, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, you have the evidence. That's who freaking owns this country. That who is who runs it. All right? They run it. Look, I'm zooming in right now on the picture of the Reserve Bank, and you can see the Rothschild coat of arms on the frickin' wall behind the desk, all right, with these little blue dragons and their big red shields. That's how they've ensnared all of us in this one horrific banking cartel ownership over the world. It ain't being anti-Semitic to say that one particular family who does provably own and run our fucking policy in the country by controlling the issuance of its currency. That is not racism. That is fucking reality. Anybody who denies it or says different is either misinformed or disinforming you. And there ain't no two bones about it. There ain't two sides to the story. There are never two sides to the truth. We've got to expose these people.
Yeah, and you'll get people who'll go to the Reserve Bank of New Zealand website, and they talk in circles there. There's a thing in the FAQs, who owns the Reserve Bank, but they talk in circles, and what they say doesn't actually own up. But we know it's a central bank. It's well known for a long time now that the Federal Reserve System in the US is privately owned. It's a central bank. They all are. But what the Reserve Bank say on their website is that they're 100% owned by the New Zealand government. Okay, so they say one thing there. And then in the next breath, they say, but it's not a government department. It's a body corporate, and it's part of the Crown accounts. So how is that part of the New Zealand government? Because we know that the Crown isn't the Queen of England. It's the bankers that run the City of London. And so they try and mince around the situation a little bit. But, you know, if the Reserve Bank was part of the government, it would be part of the Treasury, but it's not part of the Treasury. The Treasury is a government department. But the Reserve Bank isn't, and that's the telltale sign of a central bank the world over.
So who should be doing the central banking? Should it be Treasury printing and managing the issuance of currency?
Absolutely, yeah. Because, you know, when people start to understand this, you know, draw these parallels and figure it out, I mean, the most obvious question that I think people should be asking is, why is a privately owned and privately run banking institution issuing and controlling the currency of my country? Why? How does that work? Well, what do we have a government for? And the Treasury Department's basically told what to do by the Reserve Bank, because, you know, these central banks are run by money from families like the Rothschilds, who issued huge loans to these governments to ensnare them. And, you know, people think that their taxes are going to pay for roads and hospitals, and they're not. They just go to pay back the interest on these absurd loans. Roads and hospitals are paid with things like GST and road user charges and ACC and all that sort of stuff.
And, so that means, on average, the New Zealander, about 30% of your income, your hard-earned income, goes directly to the bankers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you either toe the line, or you get replaced, or popped, or bought off, or have horrible threats made to you. And that's, you know, how they keep the wheels turning. There's a lot of people that are involved in this who didn't particularly want to be, but they're kind of stuck. And you just hope that they're some of the ones who are sort of beavering away in the background trying to figure out how to undo it all. Well, it'd be nice to think that.
Well, I've described it a couple of times, the tactic of the cactus. You know, for every kind of thing that can come at you, you've got a little spine pointed in that direction. It doesn't matter whether they come from underneath you, beside you, or above you, or whatever. You give them a little prick to remind them. And that's, I think, what's happening with the human race and condition, is that we're being attacked on all sides by conspiracy and scumbaggery. And for each and every particular type of scumbaggery, whether it be banking scumbaggery, poisoning scumbaggery, political scumbaggery, there's some kind of activist or person of note within that particular place or sphere of influence for whom that issue is just basically meant for them. And they go out and they start attacking. In so doing, every single agenda, no matter where it's coming from, seems to be getting thwarted and held back at this point. People are uniting, not because they're uniting together, but they're starting to have faith in themselves and starting to make a difference on their own without anybody's help, because they can. I think that's a very important realization, is that we all fill a part in this definitive whole. And just like lions in battle, when you've got your wall of shields, if there is one chink in the formation, the whole formation falls apart. So everybody just got to start understanding that what you can do is actually really important. Just play your part. Richard here is playing his part. Comes down with a 20-page document of how to make sense of the whole banking scheme of this country in less than 20 pages. And the global players who own us and control financial policy, and it's one dude. All right? Taking a bit of information that other people have come out and just puts it up there. Just, you know, it's taking you a while, bro, but good work. Need to be done. I didn't see nobody else doing it. See? One person makes a difference. Just one. And stop believing that it's going to be somebody else. Start believing that it actually has to be you. Is and always has and only been you. You're the only one who can actually make a difference with all of this scumbaggery. And you have to take action and take responsibility for it, even if it ain't your fault. I think that's kind of an attitude that we should all really start to seriously adopt. You know. No matter how hard life gets, you simply got to keep on doing it all the time. Get the truth out there. Because the alternative, I think it's a hell of a lot worse. You know? What are you going to do? Sit quietly, do nothing while the world gets bored out around you. Nice work. See how that works out for you. Hadn't been working out too well so far, has it? WakeUpKiwi.com is the website where you can check out this wonderful illustrated PDF. And, yeah, thanks for coming on the show today at such short notice, bro.
Thank you, Vinny. No problem.
All right. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in. And I hope that wherever you are, even though it might be freaking god-awful freezing, that you feel warm and tender tonight. And have a very, very good evening indeed.